This is CliffCentral.com.
I especially chose this song for you, Leanne. It's from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Very nice. Reminds me of a band called Bread.
Yeah, I remember Bread. Mm. My dad used to listen to them all the time. There we go. It's Southern Nights. This guy called Glenn Campbell. All right, just after 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock?
7 o'clock? Did I say cock?
I think you may have.
7 o'clock, cliffcentral.com. All right, so much to get into news-wise. We'll do some of that in a second. Don't forget, we've got Blind History coming up later. Most people think of Julius Caesar when they think of Rome, whether that's because of Asterix, the famous bust of the laurel wreath, or the story of Brutus's ultimate betrayal. He's become more myth than man, but his actual story is just as fascinating as the stories that are told in fiction. Go to cliffcentral.com for all the episodes of Blind History. It's brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters. You will find something interesting. I promise you, there are people who are still telling us that they really enjoyed the Shaka Zulu episode, Alexander the Great. Just last week, we had Ramesses II of Egypt. Today, Julius Caesar.
Very nice.
Hell of a story there. All right, so in the news this morning, mm-hmm. what do we need to know?
Well, have you ever considered if you ran a B&B, an Airbnb?
No, I've never considered that because I'd be a terrible B&B owner. I'd irritate the guests would irritate me, they wouldn't want to stay more than 5 minutes. It would be
no, so think more along the lines of an Airbnb, a totally remote location, you're not there, it's just all done online. Would you be tempted to have a camera inserted into your Airbnb so you could check on people?
Well, I don't know if you're allowed to. You can't. I mean, well,
people are doing it.
Really?
And more hidden cameras are reportedly being found in Airbnb rentals. It all started with a story that highlighted the issue that has affected renters who choose to stay in Airbnb properties. Mm-hmm. A couple discovered a hidden camera in their room. This couple, Christian Aranda and Orlando Salas, said that they were looking for a quiet place to stay, to spend some quality time together.
I think I put some of that in my salad the other night. Christian Aranda and Orlando Salas.
They settled on what was labeled a cozy and romantic Airbnb, wanted to spend some private time together, and then discovered this camera hiding in the room's smoke detector. It was placed directly above the bed.
That's not right.
No, you see. So they opted to stay the night in the room despite discovering the camera, but then they did later report it to law enforcement. Police confirmed there was a camera installed in there. Although it apparently wasn't recording. So the police said that was meant that no crime was committed in the incident. Sure. But, it's happening more and more. People are now, it's becoming a thing, like a challenge if you go to an Airbnb to find the camera.
This whole hidden camera thing is just so deceitful and horrible. Look, we were talking earlier and joking. Sia found out that one of his former teachers ended up being a porn star. But that's because he's voluntarily put himself on film or on camera or on the internet. If you are filmed and you don't know you're being filmed, that is a gross violation of your privacy.
Yeah.
Now, the problem is, as much as it's illegal, once it's done, it's done. And I'm not suggesting everybody should go into a room like the CIA and like sweep the place for bugs and cameras and things. But I reckon if you are an Airbnb owner, you've got to realize it's illegal to do that, especially in the bedroom.
I mean, exactly.
Imagine if you go to the gym, for example, and you're busy changing in the gym. And the gym has put a hidden camera in the change room.
Oh, no.
You can't do that to people. You can't do that to people. They book your house or they book your apartment or whatever it is for a week's holiday, let's say. And they get in there and they're changing in the bedroom, which is where you change. They don't know you're watching them like some kind of creep somewhere far away with a remote camera that's hidden away in some air vent or something. Come on. Can't do that. That's disgusting.
And it's also because you don't know who to trust these days. You don't know what they'll do with that footage. So they say it's for security reasons.
Nah.
Next thing, your video's up on some random site. It's just all uncomfortable.
All right, well, this is just making me paranoid. Now I'm going to go into every...
I'll tell you what, I've thought about it so often being in a hotel room thinking, I wonder if there's a camera.
Really?
Yeah, think about it often.
I've never thought of that, but now I'm going to.
When I went for that, for my sleep test.
Yes.
There was a camera, obviously, that, you know, they tell you that there's a camera.
Sure.
But, just that feeling is horrible. Getting into bed, knowing that
you're being watched.
Yeah. It's a terrible feeling. But I think a lot of people have set up these cameras, not for sexual reasons. But more for, you know, if their property is damaged, they have proof.
Yeah, but you can't do that.
It's just not allowed.
Well, if you're so paranoid something's going to be broken, rather don't rent out your house.
Exactly.
But what also happened to the T's and C's of signing something when you book a place, saying, you know what, we can confirm that you've received the room in this order. Should anything be broken after you leave, it will be under your name or your responsibility. What about that?
Yeah.
I would think so. That should be enough.
That's a little too freaky for me. No, thank you.
All right. Okay. All right.
April Fool's Day, yesterday. All the stories are coming out now. Yeah, exactly. The US Open is in trouble.
Why?
Because the nearly 2 million people who follow the US Open's Twitter account were betrayed by a breaking news announcement that the U.S. Open planned to add puppies to the ball person team in this year's tournament.
People were fooled by this and now they're in trouble. You've got to be kidding me. It's an April Fool's joke, you morons.
There's certain things you don't joke about, Gareth, and adding puppies to the U.S. Open is one of them, apparently.
Oh, really? Who's cross? The animal rights activists?
No, people were just like, ooh, you really had us going. All the tennis fans and dog lovers began atting and retweeting the account. And a lot of them were questioning why they would joke about such a legitimately great idea.
People just, they really need to calm down a bit.
If you're going to spend the first day of the month getting upset about April Fool's jokes and complaining about them on Twitter, you deserve to be unhappy. Sorry.
Then there were a lot of people who responded well to it, who said, don't joke about such a brilliant idea. Apparently in Spain, they use dogs to retrieve golf balls from lakes. As the golf balls land in, they use dogs for that, which is quite cool.
Okay.
So, yeah, but the video was really cute as well that they put up. It was a corgi that was chasing all the balls that had gone all over the place, which was sweet.
Yeah, okay, but not worth getting upset about.
Definitely not.
Seriously, okay. Not.
All those other stupid April Fool's jokes are coming out now as well, so you'll see who to avoid next year.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the only reason I use April Fool's. I'm like, oh, well, these are the morons I've got to stay clear of next year. Really? And they're always dumb, and they always sound stupid the day after. And the people who get fooled are like, I can't believe I fell for it. Oh, no. What a terrible you moron. Come on.
See, because I haven't seen a good prank in a while. If it's really good and well executed, fine. Let's go with it.
So Tinder's April Fool, they tweeted that the following. They said, introducing the thing you've never asked for, but definitely always wanted. Tinder height verification. Coming soon. Read more about it here. So they were saying that they would verify users' heights that they claim on their profiles with a special badge.
You think people lie about their height?
Oh, yeah.
And because for some people it really does matter.
What, because you're too tall or too short?
What I know most commonly is it's because you're too short.
Would people, so what, they add an extra couple of centimeters to their height?
Women are very heightist when it comes to men. Yeah, definitely.
What, are they afraid that the guy's going to see them and think, oh, too short and dumpy for me?
No, we're heightist about men.
Oh, and, like, and men lie about their heights.
Yes. Hmm. So, for instance, I mean, I'm short. I'm considered short. I'm 5'2".
Right now, she's running under the table to go and fetch headphones from the other side of the room.
But that doesn't mean that I would go for someone the same height as me.
No. And if you meet a guy and he's lied about his height. Let's say he said he was taller than he was. Is that an instant deal breaker?
No, I don't ask them about their height.
But it does matter to you to a certain extent?
I try and judge in the photos.
Here's a picture of me next to a lamppost or a rubbish bin.
Go and stand next to the door frame and take a photo quickly.
Yeah, right.
Another April Fool's joke, the a monthly digital magazine about dogs announced an official new dog breed called the Silver-Coated Pouch Terrier. But and they posted a picture, but it's actually a possum on a lead.
So you are fooled by that, then actually you deserve to be fooled.
I saw a pretty funny one yesterday, and I especially marked it because I thought this is one that you will enjoy. And Leanne, this is right up your street.
Yeah.
So they said that in Scotland, they finally created a natural reserve for live haggises.
Oh no. Oh no.
And they took a picture of like a, what would you call it? It's almost like a some kind of ferret, but they'd put a wig on it.
Oh.
And they said, this is what a haggis looks like in the wild.
Oh, my
and
God.
And they've created this reserve in Scotland for wild haggises.
So bizarre.
Now, haggis is actually just the stomach of a sheep.
Yeah.
It gets stuffed with stuff. And
so it's impossible to have a live haggis.
No, there's no such thing.
McDonald's announced yesterday it was creating a new line of dipping sauces in popular milkshake flavors to dip your fries and nuggets into. Hashtag shake sauce, a sweet new way to dip.
All right.
That would have been gross.
Ngobile, hey, what's up?
Hey, morning, guys. How are you doing?
Good. What's up with you?
Nothing except I found the key for Tinder for dudes.
Oh, yeah?
Because you guys mentioning Tinder.
Yeah, what's the key?
So I got advice for you guys, right? So because I did an experiment which spanned about 4 months of my profile and my friend's profile.
Yes.
So I had to do two types of profile in two different ways. So him is basically, he's much better than me in every way. Sexier, all of that nonsense. Who cares? So I'm just a normal dude. So what I did was, I took a profile of his with his sexy body and I put a bio saying he's into books, he's onto the nonsense, and he likes ladies who are intersectional feminists, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And guess what happened?
He got hits?
Thousands, bro.
Oh, really?
No joke.
Intersectional feminists?
He mentioned all the buzzwords, all those things, and he's not that anyways. But we mentioned all of those things and he got thousands. I'm kid you not. Like, I think it was like 2,300.
Wow.
And hits that he got, just from all sorts of women.
Are they hot women? Oh, wow. Because I've never ever met an attractive feminist in my life.
Well, I wouldn't say they are feminists, those ones, but they like that the guy talks about feminism and all that stuff. So the first profile was based on that, and most of those girls were actually decent looking, as far as I'm concerned. I don't know what happened to the rest, but we got a nice sample for it. And then on his same profile, what we did was we changed the bio from intersectional feminist with the same pictures and just say, I just want to, you know, have a good time, you know, casual, trying not to sway.
All right. So you, in other words, the bait that you dangle is that you read a lot of this intersectional theory stuff and that will attract these women and they'll think, oh, well, this guy's a very open-minded dude. And then they'll come and look at you. But you have to also have hot pictures.
Yeah. Oh, I'm coming to the conclusion. So we had that picture. We had the description of the bio saying, I just want to have fun, you know, and no strings attached, blah, blah, blah. And it was not as many hits, but it was still a lot of hits. I think we got about 1,000, but not as many. But we still got a lot. Compared to my one where I did the more or less the same thing with boring pictures, I basically got almost 10 at best.
Jeez.
So, yeah, it tells you a lot about pictures. So actually we concluded with those things that bio does not matter. Screw the bio. You can say anything on the bio. What's important is you have to have three types of pictures. Okay. So the first picture needs to be, you need to look like a top billing model on your first picture. Okay.
Got you.
You need to have those nice board shorts or those ones. You need to look classy. You need to have that. What are those guys, Yanni and them? You need to look that. you know, Boysen Lee, whatever his name
Jonathan
is.
Jonathan
Yanni.
So
I haven't watched Top Billing in about 4 years, so I don't know if I forgot
the
name.
Is it about what you wear, or is it like that you are in good shape?
Incredible shape, because the guy literally has six packs on his six packs. So you have to look good.
How many of us have that? I don't have a picture of me like that, because that doesn't exist.
Right.
But Garrett, there's the thing called Photoshop. Ah.
Oh, no, dude. No.
I'm joking, I'm not going to create
a fake six-pack for myself on Photoshop.
I'm joking about that. Okay, but what I'm going to say is, okay, so yes. if you don't have a six-pack, however, because it worked with my one also, just look good, though. Have a nice picture where you look like a top billing presenter.
All right.
Second picture needs to be you showing yourself doing something very important or busy.
Oh.
Like you in an office, you having a business call, whatever. Things that show you that, hey, this is a busy person, right? And then the third type of picture needs to be you doing something fun.
Oh, like what?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, for example, me and my friend, we did the whole bungee jump, took a picture there.
Okay.
And now with Tinder, you have like those small GIFs where it's like almost like a 2 second video.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. So right. As long as you have those three types, I kid you not, it works. Because when we did it with duplicated thing with my one, I got a substantial amount of hits. Also, we did a nice looking picture, did a business looking picture, and then did one where I'm looking very active something. So, yeah, guys, if you really want your Tinder, don't have these pictures where you're looking all generic and boring and looking like a Zuma's son or something like that. Like, come on.
All right, I got you.
Well, he lives quite an exciting life, though, you know, crashing into taxis and going to court.
But I hear. Okay, so this is some very handy advice. So we had smart driving earlier with Pigspot, and now we've got smart Tinder with Mobile. All right, I like it. Yes, thanks, dude.
Cool, guys. Enjoy your day.
All right, man. Yeah. By the way, just avoid Mobile on you know, any of these dating apps as well, because he's clearly got a strategy. He's going to outsmart you.
So the things that, if I see photographs of these things on Twitter.
Tinder.
Sorry, on Tinder. It's an absolute no for me.
All right.
I don't like fishing photographs where you're holding a fish. Because that happens a lot.
Why?
Why would people
Why don't
do
you
that?
Like that?
I don't know, Gareth.
Why would people hold a fish in their picture?
I'm giving you the message. I don't know the reason why they do it. You know, when they've caught a fish.
Stupid thing to do.
There's that. You get hunting pictures as well. Random pictures of you next to your car to show what car you drive.
Oh, yes. Okay.
I really, really, really hate that. I don't like in the car selfies with the seatbelt on. I don't really like those.
It's a bit sad.
Why?
Well, because why are you taking a picture while you're driving? Because
the lighting might be good there and then.
Oh, please.
It's not. No, I don't condone doing anything else while
driving. Why are you thinking
driving,
of yourself but... in that way?
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I'm trying to think what else. Oh, like photos with you drinking in them. I don't like that.
You don't?
Like where you're downing a beer or something.
Leanne, then what do you like? You don't like an outdoorsy guy. You don't like a guy who drives.
What would make you happy, huh? What kind of picture would make you happy?
Maybe that's the point. Maybe none of them do.
Maybe Mobile's top billing presenter picture would work for you.
Yeah, that probably would.
Very good.
Mm.
Okay.
Wow.
Do you want to hear what Helen Ziller had to say?
Oh, dear. Yeah?
Because Helen Ziller has finished as Premier of the Western Cape. So she had a little farewell the other day, and she was talking about her thoughts on her biggest achievements in her own words. All right, so here they've asked her about this. She didn't just jump on TV and go, "I've got something to say about my greatest achievements." Here she's being asked about it. So listen to this.
Well, I think firstly the biggest achievement was holding together a 7-party coalition in very, very complex circumstances. That was big. And challenging. The second achievement is to have introduced governance systems that can produce results and systems that can measure those results so that we're sure that we're making progress.
And that's her shouting at the audience from the podium. Oh, she's singing. Oh, no. She's singing Brenda Fassie?
Oh, you know, you got to appeal to people.
It's unnecessary. I liked what she was saying there. You know, we often talk in this country about like women and women's rights and women who've led and women who have the ability to change the world. And we've got more women in this country than we do men. And we've got to give credit. If you give me Batabile Dlamini or Helen Zille, guess who I'm going to choose to run things? It's not even a contest. It's not even a contest. Helen Zille's going to run things. She ran things really well in the Western Cape. And I think they're going to be very sorry they don't have her there anymore. Whereas Batabile Dlamini, you just don't want anywhere near, especially near the bar. She'll finish it in about 5 minutes flat. In fact, I think on her Tinder, there's definitely a picture of her with a booze bottle right in her mouth. All right, what else is going on?
So Rachel Khuleesi, the wife of Springbok rugby captain Sia Khuleesi, remember she had blew up on
Sia told Instagram us Sia,
just
Sia
recently. It was a fitness model, 23-year-old fitness model Marika Buerta, who she called out.
Hello, Marika Buerta.
That's a sexy name.
Marika Buerta.
That's what I want to see on Tinder.
She said, send my husband inappropriate images on Instagram. But apparently she did delete her account immediately, and her account is now back.
Yes.
What is she Instagramming about?
What?
One asks. A campaign raising awareness and funds for the cyclone that hit Mozambique, Zimbabwe, and Malawi. So a lot of her followers are welcoming her back and commenting on her posts to say they're glad that she's back and encouraging her to ignore trolls and block trolls and that sort of thing.
Okay.
Just so you know, she's
all's
back.
All's well that ends well.
And,
Marika.
You know, she's, it's not the first time that she had a bit of a rant on Instagram. She had done it before.
Yeah, but you know what? She's allowed to. It's her husband. It's her relationship. What the hell business is it of ours?
Yeah, exactly.
If she wants to have a public spat with some Instagram famous model.
Yeah.
Sure. All right. I suppose who doesn't have a fight with an Instagram model every now and then?
Yeah.
I had one on Tuesday and then on Thursday and on Friday last week. I fought with 3 Instagram models.
Yes.
And I won on 2 of the fights.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Talking about, I wonder where your thoughts are with a story like this. All so right. Congratulations to Matthew Eldridge, who is a new father in the United States, whose very own mother was in the delivery room when the baby was born. But it was Matthew's very own mother who was carrying Matthew's baby. Long story short, how would you feel if you weren't able to give birth and so your mother decided to be your own surrogate?
Sounds like the plot line of a bad soap opera.
I don't know how to feel about this. So Matthew Eldridge is a father in the United States. He's in a gay relationship. So naturally they wanted to have a child and they were looking at various options of how they could have a child, whether it was adoption, whether it would be getting a surrogate. But at the end of the day, Matthew's mother, Cecile, actually said, you know what? I love you. You want to have a child. Let me help you. So they got an egg donor.
Right.
So these are not Cecile's eggs.
Of course not.
And from whatever scientific process, they took the egg donor's eggs, one of the 2 sperm cells, they mixed it all up together in a petri dish. There was an embryo that it was formed and then planted into Cecile's body. Cecile is 61 years old.
Whoa.
And is in still some fairly healthy state in her life.
Past childbearing, but it doesn't matter. She doesn't need to use
it. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Sure.
But, yeah, but as a body, she's still healthy enough to carry a child.
As a carcass.
as a meaty carcass. She's still healthy enough to carry a child. And so she did. So she recently gave birth to her own granddaughter.
Okay.
Wow, that's interesting.
I think I would probably trust my mom more with my baby than some young person who was just looking for the money.
Yeah, look, people are going to do whatever they need to do. If you really want a kid that badly and your mom steps in and says she'll be the surrogate, she's just bearing the child, and I think it's really cool of her to do it. I don't know if I'd be comfortable being in the delivery room while my mom is having my child. It's all just
weird, hey?
Yeah, it's just too weird.
So you'd only be uncomfortable by that aspect.
I'd be uncomfortable the whole thing.
Oh, okay.
No, I mean, like, the whole thing's just weird to me. But people, people have got to do what they got to do. It's just so weird. People have this, yeah, I don't know.
I'm trying to look at it from the perspective of it being something so loving. And I don't know why I can't wrap my head around it.
No, it is. It's loving. It's very sweet. It's very nice of her to do this. She's obviously, you know, someone who cares deeply about her son. He really wants this child. Fine. Go ahead. Do it.
Leanne, would you do it?
The thing is, I'm battling to wrap my head around it, like you said, purely because I don't want a child that much.
I
don't understand the desperation enough to be able to say that I would do it.
If you really want to be a parent, there are loads and loads of children all over the world who are desperate to be adopted. They don't have parents. Their parents have maybe died. They don't necessarily have anyone to look after them. There are orphans all over the world. There are loads of people who go around and, you know, they say, I really want to be a parent, so I'm going to adopt. And I always think that's the most noble thing you could do.
Mm-hmm.
So to have to make another child in this complicated way, where your mother's involved and, just sounds like a lot of work.
On the process, the doctor said this about Cecile. They said she's 61 years old and has lower blood pressure than the rest of us. When they made her run on a treadmill, even when it was turned up to the highest level, she wasn't anywhere close to the danger zone. And then Cecile said, I thought if I could do it, I would do it. Mm. It was kind of a no-brainer.
All right, well, go ahead. Go ahead, knock yourself out. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, so right. I don't know.
To each his own.
Interestingly enough, though, when we look back at former cases like this, one of the first cases actually came from our country back in 1987. This is when a 48-year-old Pat Anthony gave birth to three of her own biological grandchildren.
You know Pat, though, Leanne.
I call her Patanthony.
Yes.
She gave birth to three of her grandchildren as triplets.
So nothing new here.
Back in 1987?
Sure.
Supposedly this case alone here in South Africa.
We've been having it.
We've been having it. Supposedly caused an international media firestorm and caused debates around the ethics of surrogate pregnancy.
All right. People are talking about what they should and shouldn't put on their Tinder pics. So Michelle says, ass, you're like me. I dislike all those same Tinder pics that you mentioned. Posting with wild animals or guns or duck face is irritating too.
Yes.
According to Michelle. Someone else says, people petting cubs in Tinder pics. Yeah, petting a lion cub.
Oh, right.
You could just see they've gone off to the lion park with a camera in hand so they can get a Tinder pic. Because that still works with some people. Oh, my God. He's petting a lion. What a man.
Can't.
All right. Someone else saying, so what I learned from Nobile's call is lie, lie, lie on Tinder. Yes, pretty much.
But you just make it so much harder for yourself because you have to live up to these expectations. It's the same as submitting false information on a CV. I don't understand how people do that. I'd rather, you know, under-promise and over-deliver.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's lying. It's just not telling
the whole truth.
Yeah.
And nothing but
the truth. Full truth.
All right. Well, Cindy says, woohoo, thank goodness the clocks have gone forward again. She's in Ireland. And she says, I'm once again able to listen to you live, at least some of the show. Sending peace and love from Ireland. There's Cindy. Hey, welcome
Very
back,
good.
Cindy. And then Chris Rock said some stuff about Jussie Smollett at the Image Awards. And he got into trouble. He was told not to joke about Jussie Smollett. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you don't tell Chris Rock that.
I guess I got to present an award. They said no Jussie Smollett jokes. Yeah, I know. What a waste of light skin, you know? You know what I could do with that light skin? That curly hair, my career would be out of here. I'm fucking running Hollywood. Yes, no, just did. What the hell was he thinking? From now on, I ain't never gonna know Jussie. You're Jussie from now on. You don't even get the you no more.
Trevor Noah cracking himself up.
That you was respect. You ain't getting no respect from me. Okay.
Beautiful. There's Chris Rock just sticking the screwdriver into Jussie Smollett as well.
I mean, it's a show about black people.
Yeah,
and you are not going to talk about this. Of course you have to talk about it.
Exactly. So yesterday, Ben got all uppity.
He does that.
about phrases that you shouldn't use in emails.
Oh, right. Which one was his
FYI, friend? He hates.
FYI, for your information.
And...
FYA.
Unpopular opinion. He also doesn't like unpopular opinion.
And then, of course, you know how irritated I get by bad speech habits.
Mm-hmm.
So here are four sloppy speech habits that undermine your influence. And that's what it all is about for me, is I don't take you seriously if you do certain things with your language.
Right.
It's very difficult. But these are things to think about, and especially in the workplace. When you're in meetings, that's when all of this office speak.
I took a screenshot of our friend, the Bachelor.
Yes, Lee.
Uh-huh. Okay, let me show you this. Leanne's going to find something wrong with it immediately because that's how she got it.
Okay.
Here he is. There's his update. Just take a look at that.
Okay, if he's in front of a Merc. He says,
which already you don't like.
Which already I don't like. Couldn't be happier with my new set of wheels.
Uh-huh.
Extremely proud to be
There it is.
Oh.
There it is.
Oh.
Explain to everybody what the problem is.
Extremely proud to be, one word, a part of the Mercedes-Benz and DeWitt Motors family.
All right. So.
Okay.
Why would it be a problem to be a part, one word? Because that would mean you would be separated from them. So if you're extremely pleased to be a part from them, that means that you're not part of them, and you're proud of that. So you don't want anything to do with them.
He meant this is to why say a part.
This is why grammar matters, you fuckheads.
Yeah. This is why it matters. So little things to try and remember when you're speaking, especially in a meeting, because this is when people do it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They start with the word so.
So I know. A lot of people are doing this. I've done it a couple of times. I'm very aware when I do it.
I do it all the time.
So, you don't have to start every sentence with so. In fact, I'm going to ban it here at the office from now on.
I'm probably guilty of so many of these. So I'm just going to keep quiet.
I'm
now.
Very guilty of this one. It's like when the example, uh-huh. You see, the example they've given here is, so here's an overview. Instead, say, Jamie, here's an overview.
Yeah. Why? Why do you need to say so?
Yeah.
Unnecessary.
Using filler words such as, you know, or kind of,
I think we all do that as well.
Yeah, we all do it. So, asking permission. When you say, I want to or I'd like to, you may come across as unsure of yourself. So don't say, I want to show you a chart with our competitive analysis. You simply say, here's a chart with our competitive analysis.
Oh, I never thought of that.
My dad always does that. He says, now let me tell you, just do it.
Just tell me.
Yeah, you don't have to tell me that you're going to tell me. Hate that. Oh, it drives me crazy. And, you know, actually, or what you were talking, or people go, let me be honest with you. What are you doing the rest of the time? You've been dishonest the whole time.
You've
been lying to me all this time, so now you're finding it. Thanks for clearing that up. From now on, I can pay attention because you'll be honest.
Another way that you show that you're trying to establish your own self-confidence is if you use I think as a qualifier. So instead of saying, I think that we should just start with we should be doing this.
Mm. I'm not trying to defend myself and others who speak like this, but isn't it just sometimes for emphasis? To state the fact that it is more of your opinion.
It can be, but it is sloppy, full stop.
We could all
said I think, but in a meeting.
We could all tidy up.
In a meeting setting, right? I do sometimes feel like people get all riled up. So rather you cut in there with saying, well, I think we should do X, Y, and Z, but there we go. Table, let's decide.
Yeah, but Leanne's right. It's probably unnecessary.
Slightly sloppy.
It's just unnecessary. It's just too many words. You could cut that in half. If you were editing, and obviously this is the problem with speech, is that you are on the trot. You don't have the time to, or the ability to go back and edit. Mm-hmm. So you've got to say what you've got to say in the moment. Sometimes you don't need to say so much. Trim it down. Cut out the I thinks. Let me tell you, I'm about to do. Here is something that
I
for
your information.
Yeah, for your info. You don't need all that shit.
In my
Get
opinion,
straight to the point.
Because anything you say is already your opinion. So.
Probably.
It's very yeah. difficult. I mean, this, it's a tough list to try and stick to. It really is.
Mm. All right.
The one we most fall prey to is, you know. Regardless of who you are, we all use you know a lot. And it's become such a bad habit for all of us.
There are a lot of people who use like too much still.
Mm.
It used to be a big thing in the 2000s. Like this and you know, the problem is like, and she's like,
yeah.
You just say she's irritating, not she's like irritating.
Literally.
Literally and figuratively. People don't know the difference between those two. And people say literally, you are so annoying. You are literally so annoying. No, you, no.
Literally means that it has to have been put on paper.
It has to actually exist. It has to be physically present. It has to be provable mm-hmm. in the laboratory conditions.
No, but like literally, yeah. I had the worst day ever yesterday.
Yeah, the worst day ever. No, it wasn't literally the worst day ever because there are books where people have had worse days than you. Figuratively. But of course, if someone says figuratively, everyone's going to go, huh? What do you mean? Because people think literally means absolutely true for them.
So, you know, guys, it's now time for literally blind history.
Okay. So, like, literally, we have to, like, go to...
Like, literally...
Blind history.
Now. Just to be honest. Yeah.
Like, in my opinion, I think we should go to blind history.
I think we should go to blind history. All right. It's time for Julius Caesar Blind History. Thank you very much. We will see you tomorrow between 6 and 9. There's lots of other good stuff coming up today. It's a busy day on cliffcentral.com. Among other things, after we've heard about Julius Caesar, and judging by how much... Everybody knows about him. There is myth. There is fact. There is fiction. There is excitement. This guy's life was just incredible.
Madness as well.
Madness. That's right. And Anthony Medera, who is with Taylor Blinds, who put the series together with me, he thinks he's Julius Caesar reincarnated.
Oh, really?
Oh. Mm-hmm. Now we need to hear why.
Yes. Coming up after that, Tim Richman, the author. You can take a listen to that and a whole lot more on cliffcentral.com. Are you ready for blind history?
Let me see. No. Get it?
Yes,
I am.
All right. Did you like ancient Rome? Are you interested in ancient Rome?
I'm not particularly partial to it.
You're about to have your mind changed.
Oh, really?
Mm. So Julius Caesar is easily one of the biggest, best characters in ancient history. And we know a lot about him. There are facts and figures and dates and speeches, and historians have written tons about this man.
Mm.
And he easily makes it into the top 10 human beings of all time in terms of the impact that he's had on the world. Here he is. Let's not mess around. Here's the actual story in Blind History, brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters. Julius Caesar!
Caesar, self-appointed dictator for life, arrived at the Senate and was presented with a petition to recall somebody from exile. Other senators crowded round to offer support. Caesar waved them away, but the senator grabbed his shoulders and pulled down Caesar's tunic. Caesar cried out, "Why, this is violence!" At the same time, Casca produced his dagger and made a glancing thrust at the dictator's neck. Caesar turned round quickly and caught Casca by the arm. He shouted in Latin, "Casca, you villain, what are you doing?" Casca, frightened, shouted, "Help, brother," to another senator. Within moments, the entire group, including Brutus, was striking out at the dictator. Caesar attempted to get away, but blinded by blood, he tripped and fell, and the men continued stabbing him as he lay defenseless on the lower steps of the portico. According to Eutropius, around 60 men participated in the assassination. Caesar was stabbed 23 times. The Roman Republic was suddenly as dead as Caesar. The long-lived Roman Empire was about to begin. So I know this is one of your favorite people in history, and Anthony Medora actually believes that he is a reincarnation of Julius Caesar. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
All right, so why is he your favorite?
I just love his energy. He's got massive amounts of energy. He's committed. He's just a very, very charismatic, energetic person.
Ambitious.
Ambitious, that's the correct term. Ambitious, very ambitious.
All right, well, where do we begin with Julius Caesar? He's one of the most well-known people in history, and certainly in ancient history. He changed the face of the Roman Republic and made it an empire, really. He was the first person called dictator, which now has a terrible kind of prejudice associated with it, that someone who is a dictator is necessarily bad. He didn't see himself as being a bad guy, though.
They could have done a lot worse, Rome. As the dictators, they could have done a lot worse, and actually they did. In the years to come, post Augustus, they did a lot worse. So he was an incredible administrator. So he did a lot for Rome on the administrative side. Dictator, yes, but he put a lot of positives into it.
So where did he start off? I mean, Caesar was a military man from an early age, and he was part of the first triumvirate, which was him and Crassus, who was the richest man in Rome.
Correct.
And Pompey.
Correct. So that was the first triumvirate. But I think just to paint a context, and the reason why he needed a triumvirate was he was, let's call loosely, born into a noble family.
Patrician.
Patrician family. So they had the plebs and the patricians, and he was born into a patrician family. But they had fallen on seriously hard times. And to such an extent that I won't say he's living in the slums, but he lived in a very poor part of Rome growing up. That part of him stayed in him for the rest of his life. And that's what people like Cicero and Cato and the Senate feared the most, was that he was definitely for the people. He understood the people. He could speak to the people. People would follow him to their death. And why that scared them so much was because they needed to protect their wealth, their lands, and they could see this danger coming in what he wanted to do. So that was the greatest danger from their side.
They called Caesar's people the populares, the populists, and the old school, the patricians, were called the optimates. They were more the kind of aristocracy that had ruled Rome for the longest time. But he obviously is most well known to people because of all his accomplishments, the Gallic Wars, the crossing of the English Channel. He conquered Britain, the Rhine River he crossed, and then his crossing of the Rubicon upon his re-entry into Rome, which was an act of war, where he was basically saying to the Senate, I'm coming back as the first and most powerful citizen of Rome, and it's about time you took notice of me. I now have come to get what is mine.
Correct. Having said that, it was the same thing. The Senate basically wanted to get rid of him because they knew that they're going to be compromised terribly if he's going to take over. So, and they weren't really giving him much choice.
Was everyone in the Senate his enemy?
No. There were some people that supported, but very, very little. He didn't have massive support. Mark Antony was in the Senate at the time, and he was thrown out. Just after he crossed the Rubicon, Mark Antony was thrown out in support of Caesar. But Caesar, prior to that, he was very careful in the way he grew himself and step by step built himself up. So, law was a big part of his life. So that's where his administration part came. He was the nephew of Marius. And Marius, at that particular time of Roman history, Marius was the leading senator in the Republic, followed by Sulla.
Sulla was the first proper dictator, yes. Actually.
This leads me to a story that depicts the character of Julius Gaius Caesar. Sulla finally took over from Marius. Mm-hmm. Marius passed away, and he took over from Marius, and he was actually, like you said, a proper dictator. Then, at that time, Julius Caesar married a family member of Marius, his first wife, Cornelia. And what transpired after that, when Sulla came back into Rome, he said, "You will immediately divorce. I will forgive you, and there will be no punishment. You divorce
Cornelia.
You divorce her, and." We'll leave it at that. So in front of everybody in the Senate, he refused.
And then he was stripped of his priesthood.
Everything.
And a bunch of other things.
But he knew when he had his back against the wall, he knew what he had to do. So he wasn't brazen. He just got the hell out of town. So he got out of town. He laid low for a while, but that just showed the character of the man. And then when he was forgiven and he came back into Rome, and subsequently Sulla did pass away. But strategically, he always had the Senate against him. And that's why he needed very cleverly to put together the triumvirate to give him the necessary power to be able to set himself up in a province and to build his wealth.
In some way, I suppose Caesar was almost defined by his enemies. You know, whether he was fighting in Gaul against Vercingetorix, the great Gaulish chieftain who he humiliated horribly and had paraded naked through the streets of Rome with all of his weapons on a cart, chained. Whether it was the Senate, which you refer to as his constant enemy, whether it was Sulla or Pompey later on, whether it was eventually the senators who stabbed him to death. Ultimately, he's defined by a lot of these enemies, but he was tremendously successful in war. And he wrote a diary which chronicled all of his successes in military campaigning, the Visigoths, the Ostrogoths, the Gauls, the Britons, the Picts, all these people that he either conquered or negotiated out of their territory. And he did a lot to expand the Roman Empire and to keep Rome wealthy and satisfied while he was on campaign. But he was also greedy and ambitious and didn't leave it at that. He wanted his, you know, fair share of the spoils.
There's no doubt he was greedy and ambitious, and his self-belief was just incredible. Right in the very beginning, he went to a military campaign and he just showed himself to be incredible. That was in modern-day Turkey. And Crassus and Pompey had a massive ego that he was the greatest general that had ever lived. But Caesar was
superior.
He was superior. But he started showing himself as a great military leader and at the forefront of battles. Also similar to Alexander is that he had his own horse. I don't think there was a name that was given, but it was very, very similar that he had the same horse, always at the forefront of the battle. He did get injured a few times. Then after the first military campaign that he went on, that we're aware of, but there is talk that he went on the military campaign with Crassus to quell the Spartacus uprisings. So Spartacus was that famous story about the gladiator. Yeah. So there is stories that he was part of that. But anyway, on his way back, he came back to Rome and then he went to do a public speaking course of all things in Rhodes, and pirates got him.
Oh yeah.
And that's a scary thing to happen. But the month that he spent with the pirates, he had them cowering before him. And they treated him like a king. And then they said, what are you going to do when we let you go? He says, I'm going to get a fleet of vessels and I'm going to come and murder each and every one of you. They let him go and he got a fleet of vessels and murdered every single one of them.
Yeah. So he was a man of his word.
He was a man.
Vengeful.
He was a vengeful. And what he did was, especially in the Gallic Wars, he would always give people a chance. So he would overthrow a town and he wouldn't burn it to the ground. He'd say, okay, so you're now part of the Roman Empire. You need to pay taxes. We take a few slaves with us. Some of you join our legions. He would never destroy the town. So that built his image of being this great leader. But some didn't want to do that. And then the retribution was just scary. He burnt the towns. He slaughtered and killed women and children. Then he went absolutely overboard if they didn't succumb to the mighty Caesar.
Sure. Caesar's also fascinating because he had Cleopatra in his life. He had a relationship with her. They're supposed to have had a son together. He adopted the future emperor Augustus as his own and groomed him to be his successor. He was very close to Mark Antony. Mark Antony was like his second in command, right?
That's correct, yeah.
And he really didn't stop at just being in charge. He wanted everybody to understand that he was a god king. And this didn't sit well with Romans because they were used to a republic where they could vote for people, where there was more of a kind of system of the patricians and the plebs that you outlined earlier. So he had a tough time convincing everybody.
A big part of his tenure when he was a consul was to try and bring across, and especially Cicero. He would visit him on his travels. He would spend a weekend with him to try and convince him because he was the one that could really pull the whole Senate around towards him. But Cicero was very circumspect and he never fully came across. So ultimately in the end, Caesar knew what he wanted to do. And that comes back to the beginning of the introduction, the Rubicon River. What I've looked at in the history of Julius Caesar, he lamented heavily on this. He looked back. He wasn't sure backwards and forwards to see if this was the right thing to do, if he was going to cross the Rubicon. And
because he knew that that was his final act of defiance, and he could never be a legal citizen under the Republic again after.
Correct.
That.
And Gareth, you know that he showed it. It was actually quite sad because he jumped into the icy waters of the Rubicon and he pulled his legion across, one legion. He went into Rome. What happened? Pompey took everybody. He said, no, I'm not going to hang around for Julius Caesar to come.
They evacuated, yeah.
Exactly. And they went across to Greece to build a massive army against him. So he came into Rome. There was nobody there. There was very few senators, nobody to greet him. It's definitely not after what he had achieved in the Gallic Wars and what he'd done in Spain and all that he'd done for Rome to grow the empire and in Britain to a certain extent, although that, you know, obviously it was a tough nut to crack and he didn't really get into it so much. It was more Claudius.
He was very disappointed that all of this had amounted to nothing.
Exactly. And then you know what he did? He turned around and left Rome. He went to Spain where he knew there were that Pompey, his big competitor now, his enemy. He knew he had people that were sympathetic to Pompey, so he destroyed them in Spain. But because he's such an incredible orator, an incredible leader of men, he got most of those Romans, because it's now civil war, to join him.
Yeah.
So he built his legion.
You know, what's interesting is they've looked at the works of Plutarch and they've figured out that he might have actually had epilepsy.
I've read that, yes.
And he has also been described with various behavioral manifestations, headaches, vertigo, some kind of giddiness, you know. These things might have indicated that he was not a very healthy guy. He might even have had a stroke later on in life. So there are people who wrote about him as being tall of stature with a fair complexion, shapely limbs, a somewhat full face, and keen black eyes. But we're used to those portrayals of him with very little hair.
Yeah.
A laurel wreath around his head.
I read somewhere that the reason for the laurel wreath was because he was quite a vain man and he needed to hide his
baldness.
His baldness.
He's rumored to have been homosexual, but then in ancient Rome that wasn't a big deal.
No, it wasn't at all.
And there are many literary works that he left, his diaries and plenty of other things. But he's also, the name Caesar was actually a title. Because Julia was his family name.
Correct.
Julius.
And Gaius was his first name.
But Caesar obviously became Kaiser, which is the German title for emperor. And it's come to mean emperor all over the world. Tsar also comes from Caesar, the Russian Tsar.
And Gareth, when you talk about trying to look into a little bit to his character there, he actually, you know, it's hard to say, but I think he had quite a serious sense of humor.
Oh, yeah.
The one point where they were really so badly outnumbered because he had an incredible speed. That was his claim to fame. And that's what I noticed with Alexander, the speed. You know, the guys are pitching their tent and the next minute, it's going to take a couple of days to get here. So we pitch our tent and then we'll sort ourselves out.
These are not small distances.
No. And then the next minute, they're like standing outside ready to fight. So they have to start looking for their swords and their shields because he got there so quickly. He used to go over mountains. It was very, very Alexander-like. When he was 32 years old, he was in Spain, and he went to a certain place where he was going to, where there was the gods, where there's a place where they could pray to the gods. And he went and he spent some time there. There's a picture of him sitting on his fist, and he said how upset he was that at the age of 32, he hasn't conquered half of what Alexander had done when he was the same age.
Yeah, he was deeply disappointed in himself.
Yeah, he was deeply, deeply disappointed. But what, just the last point in terms of the sense of humor, he tripped over his robe, getting off his vessel, going into Africa to try and destroy King Tutu. And he fell face first flat into the sea. And people that, you know, the Romans were very superstitious and they thought, no, this is a bad omen. We're going to lose the war. So he quickly stood up and he says, I now hold in my hands a piece of Africa.
What about the assassination? The most famous thing about Julius Caesar, the Ides of March, the Senate.
So he was warned by his wife. He was warned by so many people. His wife said she had a terrible feeling about him going into the Senate that day. And he also felt uneasy, but he would never not do it. He was preparing to leave, to go fight the East. He wanted to extend the borders. And so he had to go. It would be a massive snub not to go. But his wife was so convincing that he decided not to go. But what had happened was they'd sent Brutus in because they were so close. He loved Brutus. Hmm. And Brutus loved him. To convince Julius to go. And Brutus said to him, look, it's going to be a massive snub on the Senate. So he went. And, I mean, literally minutes after he entered the room, they murdered him.
Most famous murder in history.
Correct.
In fact, when Dante wrote the Inferno, the lowest circle of hell, where the devil actually lives, in his mouth is where Brutus is. That treachery was regarded as the greatest treachery of all history.
Sure.
Yeah, it's quite something.
You too, Brutus. Nobody knows if he actually said that. Et ta, Brute. Yeah. You know, that could have been a bit of a urban legend. But anyway, it sits nicely.
So Julius Caesar, one of the greatest military commanders, a man of incredible force and will, who managed to bend all of Rome to his will. It's just absolutely unbelievable. And if you think about what he left in his wake and the fact that all these characters we've just mentioned outlived him, Augustus and Brutus and Mark Antony and Cleopatra, and what happened in the years after Caesar's death was something else. They eventually burnt his body in a very famous funeral, which has been documented by everyone, including Shakespeare, in subsequent works. They burnt Caesar in the Forum in Rome, and there's still a little temple where people still put roses down at the exact site of Julius Caesar's cremation. It's called the Templo Julii, I think. And that obviously was where Mark Antony was supposed to have given that great oration, "Friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears."
Yeah, that was one of the famous speeches that got everybody to go, along with Octavian, his nephew, to go and crush Brutus. Hmm. And he did. He really did. He did crush them. And he avenged his uncle's death.
In every way.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, et tu, Brute. Veni, vidi, vici.
Yeah, that was what he said. That was when you were in Africa.
Yeah, I came, I saw, I conquered. Yeah. Veni, vidi, vici. And his also, the other famous line that he gave was when he did cross the Rubicon, he said, "The die is cast." Alia iacta est. Yeah. Thanks for listening to this episode of Blind History, brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters.
This is CliffCentral.com.